The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Wolfman Jack for Lowbrow Beer.
It's Wolf. Nice of you to drop by.
Yeah, me and Lon were just going to a cheap, smelly bar to get some beer.
Oh, listen, I know how you guys love to go out and get soused and just lay around the sidewalk all night. That's why I came by, because you need a good friend.
Well, friends are okay, Wolf, but you know, a good beer is worth laying in the gutter for.
Would I come by empty-handed? Would I?
Wow! It's okay. Lowbrow Beer.
Now, there's a real friend. Give me that six-pack.
Get out of the way!
Friends, although they're nothing special, they know you're here, but really want some beer instead. Bring them a brew, that's true. Let them drink Lowbrow.
Ha ha ha, ha ha ha, pal.
You're an interesting species, an interesting mix. You're capable of such beautiful dreams and such horrible nightmares. You feel so lost, so cut off, so alone. But you're not. See, in all our searching, the only thing we've found that makes the emptiness bearable is each other.
That's control over there, you know what I
Some people loathe him, some people love him, but he is the difficult historian, no less. He is the godfather of internet radio. I am the bard of broadcasting, because I say so. And that's other. I'm also the vegetable man. 3 portions a day. My name is Frank Cotolo, man whose name adorns the title of the show. And the show tonight, today, this afternoon, whenever the heck this thing is going through your ears and into your brain. Actor of actors, Kenneth Welch, is with us for the first hour. And for the second hour, there's me, Frank Cotolo, the man's name is going to title the show. You know, we'll get along. We'll be fine. Ice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet to city, from Othello and into every bordello. Tis I, the one and the only. And I am the one and only. There is another Frank Cute. Well, there's another Frank Cotolo, but it's spelled differently. Somewhere in Canada at this very moment. I guess so. I don't know. I do know that there is someone else, but he's got a U in his name. He's got it actually, Cutolo. Because that's the actual name. There's a little bit of history but I'm a difficult historian, so it's hard to say that any of that is true or not true. It is to be or it is to not to be. But I am the godfather of internet radio. and I can command the greatest and most fascinating copy. When they say copy, as if it's written, content on the internet. And I have been doing that for over 20 years. I don't like that, saying that. But in any event, in all events, and certainly in this event, what a great show. I've been trying to get Mr. Kenneth Welsh on the show. And I'm going to have him on, providing everything is okay and everything went well. We're going to Skype him in about 24 minutes and talk about some amazing things. He is one of those actors you know, though you might not know his name here and there. He's had a couple of very strong leading roles, but, it's not like I got Dustin Hoffman on, but I don't want Dustin Hoffman on either. Or as I said last week. Hey, speaking of saying that, what I did last week, and this is a very popular thing now, and I'm liking the fact that people are enjoying some of the shows they never heard, because like I said, you know, we've been on for many years, and we've gone through a number of generations of audiences, and a number of audiences who, it's not a matter of generation, I mean, it's a generations, not necessarily in terms of decades, but generations of listeners. We lost a lot, not because they died or anything, we just lost them. And, you know, they've gone on to do things. But there was a time when we had to, you had to listen to this. You couldn't even listen to, a replay or anything. You can now, and you can get it and download it or listen to it or stream it yourself, because everything has changed since this show originated in 1967. So Kenneth Welsh is going to be here, and we're going to have a wonderful talk. I know we are. For an hour, we're going to talk about things. He's a wonderful actor. And I know if you've seen him in anything, you may have seen the movie The Day After Tomorrow about climate change. It was, what a change. I mean, it was the next ice age came along. And he played the Vice President of the United States. There are some other performances that are, you might even consider better, but he works a lot. He was supposed to come on a while ago, but he had work because it's a working actor. And that's what we like, people who work. I like people who don't work, too. I'm not just saying that. But in any event, what's going on with the voice here? There's a little bit of, they cleaned the furnace. And I swear, when they cleaned it out, I don't think they just sucked up all the dust and stuff. And I think some of it got away. No, that's right. I am drinking. I'm replenishing my precious bodily fluids, as you should. My coffee is black as hell, strong as death, and sweet as love. Yes, it's sweet again. I put back the sugar after a while. But if you weren't here, and that's what I mean. Now, a lot of people have been saying, why don't you replay some of those shows? And I got this fascinating little, it's not a format, but this fascinating little thing I think is fun, and that's why I come on. For whatever time I want to, however, the usual time live, and talk about stuff and whatever else is on my mind, who's going to be on the show, tell you to buy books, except for those people at the Twitter thing that slammed me for telling them but doing self-promotion. Okay. I think, and I encourage younger writers. Of course I do, but people are saying, you come on the show and then you say, hey, there's something that I did a while back. Because I can never do, you can't replicate these things. I know. That's my return. That's what they call it. On a desk. So to find the originals and play the originals, in this case, twice or three times I've done it, was 10 years ago, to the day. But there'll be others. And I'll tell you what some of the others that we've found, too, that have been asked to be repeated. The roller derby. There I go again. The roller derby. Female roller derby show. That goes, that was in 2007. Alan Watts' son Mark was a guest on this show back in 2006. We're going back. That's 12 years or a dozen years ago. Phil Margot, the man who wrote and recorded The Lion Sleeps Tonight, one of the famous all-time hits. I'm not going to say legendary, okay? I found that one. We're going to do that one again. A couple of other guests too. And I just wrote some of it down. Oh, 2011's Brain and Music in Interpretations. Yeah, yeah. Okay. That was from April of the 11th. And we got more. I know there's more here. February 25th, 2010, Comic Relief. I don't know what that's all about, but it's a great, great one. Out of Africa, April 21st, 2010. These are ones people have asked to hear again. So as opposed to just playing the whole thing and people getting confused going, oh, that guy is not. What are you talking about? Because there are pieces in there that are from that time. Oh, yeah. A sponsor here. Some advertising and things that refer to that date. Now, there's other stuff we're going to do, which I said from last week, okay? I wrote some stuff down. This is odd, isn't it? I'm going to do a show called I Say It So It Must Be True. Now, I know, you know, people who've listened to this show for ages, and it does seem like ages, you know, it's two decades, are saying, you know, Frank, you know how many shows you have said you were going to do, topics on shows you said you were going to do and they never happened? Yeah, a lot. A lot of them. And it was one I was going to do and I kept putting it off and I can't even find it. I can't even find the notes on it anymore. It had to do with, see, I forgot. It's a jungle out there, The Brain. That's a good show. Could find that one there too. And some other ones. You know, we've been through a lot over the course of this show. And it's still here. And I'm still here. As my mother would say, knock on wood. And there's a lot of things that have happened that, you know, what can we do? When we can only stay as current as possible, because the very idea of this show is so different from anyone who does any shows, even from the beginning, you know, back then when broadband was king, was started, when broadband was a baby, when broadband was an embryo baby, embryo baby. There's another redundant, isn't a redundant redundancy? I've been writing down these lists. Well, in any event, in all events, and certainly in this event, that's what I'm talking about, that there are stuff like that. And so we're going to do a lot of that. More on the show about the fall of broadcasting itself? Yeah, okay, we'll do that. You know, things change. Kenneth Welch, of course, I had on the, and he's going to be here. Oh, let me tell you that Marla's going to be here. That's going to be a fascinating thing. She got in touch with me today and said, you know, she was supposed to be on the 22nd. She said, well, is it possible to be on March 1st instead? Marla Martinson. I think I got it right now. I don't know why her last name brings to my mind about 2,300 names. Huh, what was that? Marla Martinbury, Marla, and I'm not making fun of her. I'm just trying to remember. I think it's Martinson. Marble cake. I mean, the things that come to my mind because I have not even a roller coaster. You know, a roller coaster goes from one place to another the same way all the time. A roller coaster doesn't change directions. I mean, while you're on it, it changes directions. But it goes from point A to point B the same exact way. It doesn't alter its path. You got to think about that for a second, okay? So Marla, let's just call her Marla, will be here. And this is going to be a real spirited and fun conversation because she is into so many things. I have no idea. I know that through the years, well, anyway, I'm not necessarily a person who will come on and give you a rap about, you know, what goes on, what happens. But people have come onto this show, and I hope Marla's not one of them. I don't want to name names. Who said they'd never come on again because I don't take them seriously. And if somebody comes on here and takes themselves seriously, that is the perfect way for them not to be taken seriously. And when someone comes on with a particular philosophy or a book about something, I have to play the devil's advocate per se. I have to ask questions And sometimes it sounds like I'm being combative, when in fact, I don't give a rat's, you know what? And I could say, as I don't, it's not like I can't say it. There's so many things. That's another thing different about this show. I want to explain this show to you. If you're listening live, and you want, I hope you're live. If you're listening live, you know what I mean. And speaking of that, which, True Talk Radio is still there. Okay. But, Political Pulp may be coming back. This will be the third resurrection of Political Pulp on the Montreal Jewish News. I'll be probably be doing that again. I don't know if I'm going to do these things every week like I do the very brief ones that are on 148.ca/Frank. But if you're listening and it's not the stream from, Juiced Talk, or you haven't downloaded it from Juiced Talk, or if you're not listening on another station, because there are other stations that will be running this show, then you are in for the treat of Tom Savino, who will be on after this with Savino Veritas. And he will be here, hopefully one of these weeks, along with Tom Martin, a man who was in cable television from the beginning. I know you're saying you get all these old guys. Yeah, I know, but we're not old like the old guys who were the old guys when we were young guys. Are we? It's a battle to the finish, my friends. I've been watching the Olympics. Oh my goodness. I saw my friend send me a video of this figure skaters. This girl, I thought when I saw her fall, I thought she broke her neck. I don't know how you don't break your neck with this kind of fall, but there hasn't been a lot of, accidents. People watch those things for falls, don't you think? Those kind of, they're so dependent upon time. And some of them are really brilliant. But you know what happens? I think this happens. I think this happens. This is the way I look at it. Is that the Olympics, they win. Let's say this downhill skiing, you know, whatever. They fly up in the air and then they hit the ground and then they gotta go crisscross, not hit flags or whatever. And the winner, if there's like 23 of them from 30 countries or 30 of them from 23 countries, whatever, and they win by 0.01% of second, of a millisecond, or ultrasecond, or megasecond. I have no idea how long it goes. I guess it goes in infinitum, infinitely, infinitum, ad finite. It just goes on and on and on. And I say to myself, geez, you know, they got, here's a gold winner. This guy won the gold, the big, the one that they're all going to be talking about. He's the big guy. And the guy next to him, the guy who came in second, he didn't come in second with them. They didn't ski concurrently or didn't do like horses, you know, all together or like the speed skaters do when they do it all together. But those guys and gals, they win by 1/100th of a 1/2 of 1% of 1/1000th of a thing. How much worse is the guy who gets the silver? And what am I saying? I guess I'm saying there's something wrong with that to me. You know, honestly, wrong. I'm not going to judge it. I'm going to say that there's something strange about that to me. Now I'll drink some coffee. Kenneth Welsh is among I know I changed subjects. That's what I do here. I just go on. Charles Dennis will be back. I told you that. Seven Graylins will be back to talk about more things that have to do with how this is changing so rapidly. But that was my original stream of thought, scream of consciousness. A friend of mine wrote a book or had an album called Scream of Consciousness a long time ago. It didn't sell. But I'm in a strange way. I think I told you this over the summer because I was doing the same thing. And I'm involved in a project that is really, it's not just taking a lot of my time, okay? And brain power and creative power. Not just that. But I'm letting it. And I'm giving more because I love what I'm doing, see. And not only because it could, hopefully, you know, set me up for the rest of whatever I have left in this life, but because I love doing it. And it affects everything else I do. Everything. Because it never truly leaves my mind. I dream about it. This is how strongly this project is. It's in my consciousness. Or as I'm told, well, you're in the zone, Frank. I'm in the zone. And that, no one's ever told me I was in a zone. And now that's the phrase. That's what people who know what I'm doing, and there are a few of them, only a few. They say, you're in the zone. Well, one of them says that, but I mean, that's you know, who's going to say, you know, the other people, the people who don't know what I'm doing, say like, what's wrong with you? Because that is that's a Brooklyn thing, and it's spread throughout the world. Somebody doesn't say, doesn't ask a question. Are you okay? Are you all right? Are things going well? No. What's wrong with you? And that, when you say that to somebody, what's wrong with you? You're saying there's something wrong with them, and you want to know what. Or you're saying, I feel, see, and understand that there is something wrong with you. There must be a right if there's a wrong. So we want to know what's wrong with you. That's something I grew up hearing a lot in Brooklyn. But, you know, we did a lot about Brooklyn. You know, that dog thing we did last week. We didn't do it last week. The show I ran last week that had to do with the dog door, the pet door that is inside of a screen door, or, you know, in a back room, a back backyard door or what have you, which all had to do with Brooklyn, which is definitely not this planet. But so many people come from Brooklyn. These things spread like, you want to say like what? There you go. There's an assimile. They spread like what? Like wildfire? They spread like wildfire. They sell like hotcakes. Or viruses. If you're a listener, Mike picks that up from way back there. My name is Frank Cotullo. The man whose name adjoins the title of the show. In moments, which equals minutes, I will be calling Mr. Kenneth Welsh. Hopefully Mr. Kenneth Welsh is okay and everything's all right. And the connection's fine and he's there because I really want to talk to him. And I think you'll enjoy this. I know you'll enjoy this. Because people in show business, actors, actresses, people who do, you know, we've had lots of people who support the making of films. People in crews, people who write, people, you know. And they're always fascinating people because they deal in this fantasy. And because everyone wants to know, I mean, everybody wants to be an actor. It's like everybody, I always talked about the writing. Everybody wants to be a writer. Everybody thinks they have one book in them. They don't. They don't. And because all the people who I've met through Charles Dennis are just terrific. They're just terrific people. And anybody who pays attention to being on this show is all right with me. And that's the way it's been for 20 years. Charles will also be back on, and we'll be talking. We haven't talked about Barking Mad, which is a movie he has done. He has done. Done. Did you do that? He done it. And a couple of other people, too. We haven't heard from Gary, Dr. Popoli, who unfortunately lost his father. And since he's lost his father, we've lost his number. No, it's not. Well, I think we have his number. But, you know, we're giving him some space and what have you. But he'll be back, no doubt. Dr. Waldor, I have to email him or tell him. I think I Facebooked something a while ago. You know, just Facebook. What's with Facebook? It's a whole other story, right? People are leaving Facebook like they left Poland before World War II. And are you going to look it up now? Get your browser. And Amazon, my books are there. and you can get them in digital format, just go to Books Francatolo. At blurb.com, two other books, the books I have written and have been illustrated by T. Stephen Gesick of Art and Design. He's one of the guys, you know, has something to do with the making of, you know, a crew person, artistic director, and a great artist. He will be, well, he will be. He done, I mean, he's done. He did the artwork to Molotov Memoirs and more Molotov Memoirs, now available in digital, as well as very expensive hardcover. And, of course, Lulu.com, where you could still get those cheap ones, cheap downloads of the essays, funny essays. I like those books. Return of Turk Bahrain, for one. Who else? And with something, someone, something else I thought. T. Stephen Gesick's married to Peg Robinson, who is a director and a production person herself, who wrote, co-wrote the screenplay of one of my books, which you can buy. You can't buy the screenplay of one. You can buy License to Skill. That's one of the books available. Very funny. That they tell me. I don't know. And she's involved with that movie, which has already won a plethora of awards and is headed for an Oscar. So maybe we can have her on before, or maybe after when it wins the Oscar, or maybe after they lose the Oscar. Why not? It's the three billboards and a pair of socks or whatever it's called. We'll get Peg on. She's cool. We'll get Peg on. And let's see. I guess we should try Kevin. Kevin? Kenneth? What is it with names and me? I don't know. I have various problems. I'm sure this is Kenneth? Kenneth Welsh. Yes. Missed call. How did I miss a call from Kenneth Welsh? This goes back to August. I guess we were trying. Oh, group. That's when he was on. He was originally on here with Charles Dennis and another guy. Because he was in a movie called Shortly to Go. I don't know where is that? It was, I had a special screening of it. It's a short. I don't know. We're going to ask Kenneth a number of those things. Let's start now by trying to call him on our Skype. It says here there's no answer. So what we'll do is we'll wait because Kenneth, you're not online. Okay, Kenneth, I said 9:30. Which is 6:30 his time. He said at 10:30. I don't know. You know, I'm always confused about a few things. Okay. One of them is these, where are people? Time wise, I believe he's in LA. That's why I told him Eastern time, 9:30. But I'm one of those people. Who when something goes wrong, remember that song, Something Goes Wrong, I'm the first to admit it, but the last one to know. That's, what's his name? Look at this, it's Kenneth Welsh. That's it, it's Kenneth Welsh. I said the 9:30, so give it a break. It's still, I don't know, your clocks are different. I'm the one who always thinks, it's gonna go wrong. That's it. It is 9:30, so we'll try to get him here in the meantime. So those are some of the people we're going to have on. And I ask your forgiveness for my, I don't know what it's called. I'm kind of, you seem disparate. Not desperate. Disparate. Perhaps that's it. Oh, look, he's trying to call again. Now watch. Broop. He might be here. Because it's exactly 9:30. No answer. I'm sorry. That's it for Kenneth Welsh. I'm sorry. He's just not here right now. Call no answer. Skype is fascinating. It keeps updating. You know, this is about, does anyone know what exactly is an update? You know, when you got your Windows. And once in a while when you shut down, it says, do not turn this off because updates are coming. And it says, then it's downloading your updates, 1 of 10, 1 of 5, 1 of 3, 1 of 1, whatever the case may be. And I guess you have to be a real geek to know, what are these updates? What is an update? What is an update? And I'm serious. As serious as someone could be. What is an update on... And then, now Skype does that. Every once in a while, Skype, they only got updates. It's a brand new Skype. Oh, there's a, you know, we've updated this, we've updated that. From what Skype was in the beginning to now is amazing. It's there, and it keeps going, you want to install this now? And won't, and then what happens to some, you put it on and then something, it doesn't work. Or something different is about it. There's something different about it. I know. We're going to keep hearing that because we're going to keep calling Kevin. Ken, stop with the Kevin. Who am I thinking of anyway? Yeah, I've been making a list of phrases that are now becoming normal. Common, I should say, not normal. Which I don't like. And which I have worked my cannolis off. Cannoli is an Italian pastry. Ganol, as they say. Ganol. People call them, if you're not Italian, you call them cannolis. Let me have a cannoli. You know, some people who are Italian do that, but they're American, they're so American Italian that they don't have that, accent. They don't have the sound of the word in another language. Ganol. Cannoli, what? Yeah, it's like, when you go, it's like people call the cheese, rigoda. Even Italian Americans are that. It's got rigoda in it. Rigoda? What is rigoda? Is that a goat? What is rigoda cheese? Is that goat cheese? Rigotta. See, it's like when, it's like Savino Veritas. You can't go Savino Veritas, cause Veritas. You've got to say it in its language, with its language dynamics. Calling again. See, I don't know if I have the same time. I have the time. The time is just my time. Is yours. Not there yet, baby. Not there yet. So. So they said rigota. Oh, rigota. Yeah, they say rigota. You learn that if you go around, if you go anywhere in the world, you will hear that people in other countries, when I say other countries, of course, the United States is another country. Canada is another country if you're in another country, right? But if you're in the, Eastern, is this the Western Hemisphere? Yeah. No, this is Eastern. Yeah. This is Eastern Hemisphere. Gotta get your hemisphere straight here. So if you're from, forget about it. Forget about it. There's another one. Forget about it. Forget about it. Forget about it. If you've seen the movie Donnie Brasco, it was the only movie where they addressed, the only movie even about mobsters or whatever, you know, where they address the phrase, forget about it. Now, forget about it. So you'll hear people say that. Now, in English, it's got a New York accent to it. Because if someone says forget about it in Italy, if you're talking about Italian, you know, Cosa Nostra Mafia, in Italy, I don't even know if those guys say that. So I'm not going to go to find out because of my name. Let's call again here. Kenneth. I said it. Kenneth. Mr. Kenneth Welsh, ladies and germs, is not there right now. Something's wrong. I don't know. Something's always wrong. What's wrong with you, Frank? I have had people say that to me from the beginning of my life. That I understood language. The beginning of my life, then I understood language. But what's wrong with you? Now, the Tom Savino, when I was working with him, that was a key phrase of his. But you'll find here, let's go back to this Italian, just to this various foreign thing. If you put a foreign word or a foreign name of an object like the cheese, rigotta, but an American or someone, well, anybody who doesn't speak Italian or know Italian or is part of an Italian heritage or whatever, they're going to look at it and they're going to go, look, here's some ravioli they're selling with ricotta cheese, ricotta cheese. Okay, ricotta. So they're doing it phonetically. Ricotta. And they're going like, what do you mean? It's a G? Yeah, see, now, R-I-C, I'm just writing this, ricotta. They say ricotta cheese, right? Ricotta cheese, they say. But it's rigotta. You don't have to twirl your R's like that. Rigotta. And then people, I don't know, you got to say it like that. What are you? Yeah, that's how you say it. And people, like, it's just like German. I guess everybody who is from a particular culture that has another language uses the exact pronunciation. That's what I mean about Savino has Savino Veritas. And you have to say Veritas. You can't go Savino Veritas. And if you go around the world, I don't mean you have to go completely around the world. Wherever you go and there's another language or whatever, you're going to hear people saying words that are their words. But if they say your words, they're gonna say your language. They're gonna try to pronounce it as you pronounce it. Thank you, Kevin. Kevin, stop it. He's mad at me. Kenneth? Kenneth? Kenneth Welsh? Hello? Kenneth Welsh? He made it to the set on time, though. We know that. So it's 38 minutes after the hour. And as you know, I could find any number of things to riff upon and move on. And, you know, there was something I wanted to play. That someone asked me once. I did this interview a long time ago. But from this lady who did a podcast when podcasts were famous. Let's see if I could find this. Maybe it's here. No, I don't know where. I forgot what it's called. And I wonder, see, I don't like to do this because I don't like, what is this? I just found something. Oh, that's not supposed to be there. I get, as I go along, I get my own. I don't even know. What is this? I've got all these files here. What is this?
Your taxes don't have to be taxing this.
Oh, that's a, what is that? H&R Block? Why do I have an H&R Block commercial? I go, because I think that's a joke. I think that's a joke. I said twice. There's an interview. I am, by the way, speaking of interviews, let me mention this too, because this just came up recently. I'm going to be on the Howie Siblinger, who runs True Talk Radio and is the man who runs Montreal Jewish News when it's up. That, you know, the Montreal Jewish News is as tough as Israel itself. And it's not, yeah, because it keeps, you know, keeps having everywhere you turn. So they crash it. They hack it. Things go on. It's got to go on and off and on and off. Thank goodness I am liked so much that when comes time to boot it up again, Howie calls and says, hey, Frank, I love Political Pulp. Can you put Political Pulp back? And I said, yes. He said, this time, yes. I want you on my show again. And every once in a while, I'm on out there and up there in Montreal. It's been a while since I've been on his show. He's a radio show up there. And I'm going to be on again one Sunday night. I will let you know exactly which Sunday night. Come that Sunday night on the Howard Siblinger show. And it's a different, when I'm on someone else's show, it's different. So, and my, why I remember that is because there's this someone, I don't know. I've just lost in the years. And if I could find the, file, cause I don't even remember the file name, but I was interviewed, maybe it's on Promos. I was interviewed on this particular show a long time ago, and someone had said, you know, I heard an interview, because these things go around and round, and they wind up here and there. And, see, I don't see it. I'm looking through any number of, files. And I'd know, you know, I'd know the name if I saw it. That's what I do. You know, I don't remember a lot of those things, but when I see something and I remember it, that's how I do it.
And how is that working out for you?
It works out well, dear. So there's an old time radio thing there, huh? Carts. We used to have carts. We used to do it with carts. Carts. Cartridges went into a cartridge machine, and then, you know, you'd be saying, they'd say things, and just put it in, like this.
Give me a box of pants.
Give me a box of pants. And it's like, well, so? And of course, I am what am I? I'm the one who does all this stuff here. Just me alone here. And let's call Kenneth Welsh again. Hey, I think he might be on because I see, oh no, I just saw something that looked like it was on. I hope he's okay. See, there I go again. Now I've done this before. I have told you this because when Jiggy Jaguar was supposed to be on beginning of the year, and I revealed once again something about myself, which is like when something is supposed to happen at a certain time and it doesn't, then I immediately think, because I was raised to think, now of course I know this now. At the time I didn't know this and I was neurotic about it. But I've gone through many different situations and understandings of myself. You know, I don't need this return here. There you go. Just move that darn microphone thing. I've gone through many therapeutic episodes to know. So I know what happens. So here's something. So here I am. Something happened. I said, well, something's wrong. And what did I do wrong? But what's wrong with me? See, it's always that with me. I'm not going to do a whole show on that again either. I'll think of any number of things, but he's definitely not at his post. Mr. Kenneth Welsh is not at his post. Now let's do this. I'm going to do this while we're here. As opposed to when we walk away, I'll do it while we're on, because I am the godfather of internet radio, and I know how to use this darn place. I'm going to go to my Yahoo Mail, and I'm going to see if perhaps I got a mail, or maybe I don't know something happened, and maybe I don't know what happened. See, to find out. Oh, that, you know what that means? Yeah, it means I got to put in the. Okay, I got to put in my password. That's how it works. You can always, let's see. Got to do that without. Did I do it correctly? Yes, I did, because I don't have my. Uh oh. 9:30. Here he is. Here, there is an email for me, and it says, "Hey Frank, I just had another look at your message. I'm unsure how to make contact. Are you trying to Skype me now? I'm on the same time as you. Can you try and reach me since I have no idea how to reach you?" Yes. Yes, I am. Let me write back. See, it was my fault. Yes. Here, let me reply. Yes. Yes, I'm trying. Come on, reply. Yes. I am trying to reach you on Skype. No wonder, that's what I'm trying to do. Yes, there is no answer. You know, the bad part about this, I should have thought of this before, but what's the bad part about this is that we're losing time. He said he was, look at all this other stupid message I got. Now we'll wait for him. This is one of the problems I have with having a different, find my friend. Well, what? Kenneth wants to share. What is this? Find my friends? What is this? View request. Kenneth Welsh's location must be signed into iCloud. Wow, I don't know about this. What is that? What is iCloud? Does anyone know about iCloud? I'm supposed to talk to him on iCloud. Wow. This is fascinating. He should get right back to me. In the meantime, here's what I'll do. I'll try to, let's see if I can try. I'll try to Skype him again. iCloud? What? No, see, he's on iCloud? He said you're trying to Skype me. And again, there's always something. And I'm sure, there he goes. Now I have him. Now I have him.
Good God, man.
What?
Let me see if I can increase the volume here, Frank. I don't know what's going on, man.
What have I done? Can you hear me now?
What have I not done?
Me? What have I done?
And I can barely hear you. Wait a minute.
Really? Okay, I'm...
Hold on.
Okay, holding on. I can yell if I need...
This is better, man. I can hear you now.
Hey,
there we go. I can hear you now, okay. Sort of, yeah. this is bad.
I
have no idea how these things work.
Well, you did it so well the first time we talked a while back in August, but okay. I got a message from you about iCloud. I don't know what that's all about.
No, that's very mysterious to me, too.
Wow.
I don't understand that either.
There's some, yeah.
Oh, well, here we are.
That's good.
What have you been doing for the last 15 minutes?
I've been talking about how someone says to you, so when someone sees something weird happening with you and they know you, they go, what's wrong with you?
Okay.
Right? Something's wrong. So you know how people do that?
I guess so, yeah.
What's wrong with you, Frank? And I've been hearing this since I was a kid. It's been a psychological mess. What's wrong with you? And I've been telling everybody about you under this pretense. And that is this.
Right.
A while ago, before I met you and before I did an entire show, entire 2 hours, talking about actors, great actors, and who you know when you see them. But then you go, oh, that guy. You know, people do that. Right.
Yeah, that happens to me all the time.
And I was telling everybody, if you've seen this movie or that thing or you've been, you know, then you'll know Mr. Welsh. But, right?
Because people always, you know, they stop me even in my home, in my town where I live here. And they say, oh, you're that actor.
Yeah.
And I say, yeah, I guess I am.
And
then
so,
they say, I saw you in something the other night. And then I say, what was it? And then they say, I don't know. So, I mean, I've only been doing this for like 55 years, you know.
That has to be, isn't it better than being, I've had long periods on the road with a well-known face and it gets very annoying after a while, too, to always be noticed. Always
be
noticed.
Well, I think so. You know, at one time in my life, I was a pretty good friend of, like, John Travolta's, okay? And mm-hmm. he came, actually, to visit me up when I was – where my parents live in Victoria on Vancouver Island.
Right.
Back in the 80s, I guess. And I remember we were walking down by the Empress Hotel, and there were these two young ladies just, a little distance away. And John said, Kenny, get between me and them, you know. So I guess, you know, people like him have to do that all the time. So you're right.
Yeah.
It's much better to be kind of like unknown, incognito. And, you know, if you play a lot of characters in different ways, then people don't recognize you all the time.
You know,
which is what I've done most of the time. You know, I've always liked to try and bring something different to each character I play. So maybe I don't look the same or sound the same, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, everybody knew Lon Chaney.
Yes. Oh my God, man.
But you know what? You know, wait, that's an interesting thing because I haven't read a lot about Lon Chaney, but I'll bet you that he was walked around town because he rarely really showed his real face that he
No, never. I mean, he would spend like 4 or 5 hours just making up every day for something, you know.
Even when he played a normal guy, he looked
different. Yes, absolutely. Right? Yeah. Sure.
So maybe they didn't. That's a bad example.
I know, but nowadays they do it with makeup and they do it digitally too. They can change your face any way they want.
Yes.
Which kind of scares me in a way, you know, because now, you know, the digital realization of creatures in on film is like animals and so forth, like in Peter Rabbit, you know. He looked like real rabbits now. People look like real people.
I'm fascinated. I'm still fascinated at special effects. I don't know how it's, in other words, you can't go any further than the tech, right? How can you go any further than what they do now?
Well, I think they can, because every time I see an animated film, say, it gets more and more realistic, and it kind of scares me. I predicted this when I was way back when I was in university. I was reading a play called R.U.R., which is about how robots take over the world. Mm-hmm. And I suddenly thought, well, this could probably happen to actors one day, you know, that face us with robots on the stage. And that's very likely, you know, either with, you know, real robots or some kind of,
Let me tell you this. I was going to tell everyone, and I haven't told them yet if you haven't read it. Remember Roy Orbison?
Of course. Okay. Yes.
Well, he's going on tour. Now.
Wait a minute now. Oh, Frank, wait a minute.
Listen,
he is?
The...
What do they do? What do they call that?
It's a hologram.
A hologram, right?
Yes.
They're actually... Oh, my heavens.
The family, the estate, has given all the rights and everything to him, and he is, and I saw one picture of it, a couple of seconds of this, and he has an entire orchestra. Of course, it's all orchestrated differently because, you know, that's a lot different than it was back then.
Yeah.
And he has singers, background singers and everything, and you could see him in, he turns around, he's gonna do like 23, 24 cities. It's amazing.
Oh, God.
So it's like, you know, it's wow. It's really, reality is changing.
And, you know, he'll react to the audience, I guess,
yes.
as they react to him.
Yeah.
And at the end, he'll take a bow, he'll receive flowers on stage and everything in some sort of form or other.
So there's
who knows?
The hologram. And we know what they've done.
Wow.
Yeah, and we know what they've done in movies. That's what you're talking about, too. They did with Peter Cushing.
Yeah, exactly right.
Peter Cushing.
It's a good thing. Yeah, no matter. It's a good thing I've come to this stage in my career where it's like I don't have to do much anymore because there's nothing left to do, you know.
But I told my son, I said, I told him that you were going to be on. He went, well, how do I know him? You did the same thing. And I said, okay, I go to the obvious one, especially for millennials and what have you. I say, you've seen The Day After Tomorrow, right? Yeah. I said, well, he's the vice president. And they all go, oh, yeah. So they know you. Right?
Well, there's also, you know, Twin Peaks, which seems to have a life generation after generation. That one as well, you know.
Twin Peaks.
But Day After Tomorrow, I think, is a very interesting film because I think it was probably the first, maybe the best of its kind to depict, you know, the climate change, the way it's, you know, it's happening now.
The Ice Age.
And that was... We did that back in like 2003 or 2004, I think.
But for the first time, a couple of weeks or maybe a month ago or what have you, I watched the version of The Hound of the Baskervilles that you were in. I had never seen that version.
And, how did you find that?
Well, you know, this cable stuff is crazy. I mean, this once in a while, these things come on. And when I saw it, I said, you know, that could be Kenneth's. And so I went and it did indeed have your name there. And I went, well, that's the best time to play Watson because he really takes a major role in that. He doesn't take a major role in a lot of other
No, he doesn't.
You have
that is the one that is. Yeah. That's all about him.
Yeah, and I went well. That it. No wonder he took this one. That's good. This is because Watson's. You know, he's Costello.
we did three or four more after that.
Three
in which I kept doing less and less, of course, because Watson, as you say, does less and less. And I had such fun doing that with Matt Frewer, by the way, who was so funny. I mean. We just had so much fun, you know, when we weren't shooting and the director had to come to us and tell us to stop behaving like 4-year-olds very often. But because I did the first one, Hound of the Baskervilles, you know, and I was like starring in it, they had to pay me a lot, you know, a lot of money.
Yeah, sure.
As I got to do less and less, they had to pay me the same because that's this kind of deal I had. This
rarely
happens, you know, in this business. So I really took advantage of that.
And the spin.
But I enjoyed playing that one a lot. You know, I really loved that character a lot.
Yeah, well, the spin on Watson is, you know, it's equivalent. I mean, Nigel Bruce is to the real Watson, the literary Watson, as Tarzan is to the literary Tarzan. I mean, they made him such a goofball with Basil Rathbone, right?
That's right.
And he's not a goofball. He's the guy who wrote all those stories. And I liked yours. You had an extra. In fact, they changed the Basil Rathbone Hound of the Baskervilles was completely. They couldn't let that character Watson take over. They went and rewrote the whole darn thing. But I liked your spin on Watson. It was
Thank you. And as you say, he's not a dummy, and I didn't want to play him like that. You know, because he helps very much in solving it, Sherlock is away. He's looking after the shop and, you know, and helping to solve the crime. So, absolutely, it was.
Yes, I've recommended
it. It's a great.
I've recommended it to everyone. I know.
Oh, great.
Both of them. No,
well,
I know.
Maybe I'll get residuals now.
Well, yeah, you should know that it's been running. It's been running there. I don't know what your deal, how that covers your deal. I want to ask you a few, I know you got to go at like, what, 10, you're in the same time, so you got to go at 10:30, right?
So
we got time to talk some more, but I want to ask you some questions that have to do with, your influences, because I'm always interested in the roots of anybody who's creative. Where do they come from? What did you borrow? And we didn't have time last time because, you know, Charles always brings on like a jury of people and we have like 30 people on. So let's go back to the beginning, when.
Okay.
Give me some of those, actors. Tell everyone some of the people who really moved you at any given point when you said, I'm going to be an actor. And because look at that. Him.
Well, okay. I guess the first one was when I was very young. I didn't realize I was being influenced by it, but it was Gary Cooper in Beau Geste.
Whoa! Wow, there's one. Pull that one. Wow.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. I was like, I don't know, 7 or 8. And this kind of, you know, it planted itself inside me. And as years went by, then I realized later on that Frank Morgan became a big influence on me too.
Really? Go ahead.
And as I said, I didn't realize it until many years later when I played, Edison. And I realized I was playing it just like Frank Morgan.
A light bulb went off in your head.
So sometimes, you know, these influences can come when you least expect them, but I guess the most, obvious one for me was, when I saw Marlon Brando in On the Waterfront.
Okay. Really?
Yeah. I think that was a big influence on me. That's what really made me decide to become an actor, for real. I was like, in high school at the time and it was playing at the drive-in and I used to ride my bicycle because it wasn't that far away. And I would, you know, park my bike and sit on the bench and watch this movie. I went like 4 or 5 times. So I think that was probably the biggest influence on the way I started to approach my work when I went to university and studied acting.
So were there
so happened
Stanislavski stuff?
Exactly. It happened that my professor at the oddly enough at the University of Alberta up here in Canada was, you know, a teacher of the Stanislavski method and a very good one because it's not easy to do. You know, it's a question of recognizing. It's where somebody's doing an improv or a scene, whether it's true or not, you know, and he could always recognize the truth in what we were doing because so many people pretend they can, but he had an absolute way of seeing whether what we were performing was right on that level of the truth. That is moment to moment reality, you know, which is what I felt, you know, Brando represented in that film for me, you know. So, I guess that really, you know, I mean, I think that's probably it. You know,
I mean, Brando,
probably Gary Cooper and...
those are two very different actors.
Well, no kidding.
Yeah.
Gary
Cooper, I don't know, just... The thing about Gary... Well, I don't want to talk about what I think. What about Brando elsewhere? I mean, that movie, did you go back? When did he disappoint you?
I don't think ever.
Really? You never saw Island of Dr. Moreau, where he does Jerry Lewis?
Well, no, even that.
Even you know,
that. Everything he did was tinged with a kind of sense of humor or a kind of oddness. Because I don't think I understand. He never really took it that seriously. And I was in a film with him, as you probably know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in The Freshman.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to observe him, you know, and how he was just like a practical joker, and he just loved to hang around with the crew, and he kind of, you know, had this great relationship with Matthew Broderick. And
I guess the fact that he took that part would, you know, says something right there, huh?
Yeah. I mean, my only contact with him, Frank, actually was in the very end of the film. I was playing this kind of weird guy who was like Matthew's stepfather.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working for Fish and Wildlife. And they were like cooking up animals and serving them in a restaurant, or at least pretending to. And I came in and I had to take away a lizard from him, a very large kind of Komodo dragon, mm-hmm. it was supposed to be. That was my only moment with Marlon Brando, but I cherish it. I came charging into the room. I said, "Put that down," and something like that. I ran over and took the dragon away from Marlon, and that was it. So I can say I actually worked with him, you know.
I knew Bruno. Bruno Kirby was in that. I knew Bruno.
And then he passed away at some point, not long after that. Young.
Was it that around then? Yeah, I know. That was
It wasn't too long after that. Okay. It was a year or two later that Bruno passed away. I don't remember how or why, but
He had pancreatic cancer.
He did. Okay. Yeah, you know everything, Frank.
I know a lot. And you know, I have this strange thing. I don't study it or what have you, but how people died, how celebrities died. I seem to, that sticks with me. Although I knew Bruno, I was different, but you know, I would remember
that's
fantastic. That. Yeah. No, it's not.
It's kind of macabre. It is. Why not? You know, it's good to have knowledge of something.
Yeah, well, thank you.
I mean, a lot of people are dying around me now. I know. I guess because I'm getting older.
Gary Cooper, lung cancer.
Yeah, he was a big smoker.
Robert Taylor, lung cancer. Here's the strangest lung cancer one you'll ever hear. Ozzie Nelson, lung cancer. Never smoked a cigarette in his life.
Wow.
One of those weird guys, you know. But okay, I digress. Okay, so you take a little bit of Cooper. And you take a little bit of Brando, and you
and Frank Morgan.
And Frank Morgan. Now, everyone, I hate the movie, and I've done countless monologues on The Wizard of Oz. Let's not go there. The point is, that's where people really remember Frank.
I've seen him in, saw him in other movies where
you
he
and
was
I have
completely different.
Yes, you and I have probably seen lot more of those movies than a lot of
I can't
of
remember them. The names of them, but I certainly remember him being he was a great actor in everything he did.
Yes.
You know, I guess, hey, what about Robert Newton?
Oh, wow.
When I was young, I was influenced by a lot of
The English, Treasure Island and the.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, Robert Newton.
That's right. That's where I began to start doing dialects. I'd see all these guys in English movies, and I had this tape recorder, and I would do as many dialects as I could. And once I decided to become an actor, I would practice this because I knew that someday this would be my best tool. And it turned out to be so.
Tell people.
That I became this.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I thought you
were. No, I just became like a character actor, you know, and I knew I'd work more that way.
Tell people in the beginning of your when you begin to act, okay, everyone's self-conscious in the beginning, no matter what you do, right? Stand up, musician, running for anything.
I guess so.
Right?
Yeah.
When did you finally feel comfortable with your voice? I mean, I'm Kenneth Welsh. I'm coming to this part, and I'm going to do this part. I'm not self-conscious. How long did it take you to really get into it and say, "Oh, I'm an actor. That's it. Period."
I think it actually happened in high school. I did this play called The Silver Whistle, which I played a character I remember very well. His name was Emmett. And I appeared every now and then over the back of a wall and talked to the main character and had a few jokes, got a few laughs from the audience. And I began to feel very comfortable right then and there.
Wow, that's good.
Once I knew I could get laughs, you know.
That's good.
I guess that was the key for me.
When,
and then I guess the next main one was when I was given the role of Hamlet at the Stratford festival in, in Ontario. Mm-hmm. And, I got to play this part for a year. And, he has a fairly responsible position, on the stage for like 3 hours. And at that point, I guess, I realized I could probably do anything after I played that one.
I don't know how any of that stuff, and this is obviously a personal thing with me, and I've done some acting, but my main problem has always been remembering. Hamlet is, that's madness to me. How can you do Hamlet, like, in the afternoon? Let's say you're doing it 5 days a week. You do it in the afternoon.
Listen.
And then at night you go out to dinner and you want to talk to someone. You have to go back the next day. How the heck did that, how does that happen? That is amazing.
Well, it happened actually rarely because we were doing it in repertory, right? So I would have to play it like once every 2 or 3 days.
That's,
and then, you'd have like a break.
Wow.
That's what they do up there. They do like 5 or 6 plays, and you fit your play fits into the whole pattern of it. But there was one point at which I did have to play it 5 times in a row, and that I still remember was extremely challenging because there was a Friday night, there was 2 on Saturday, and there were 2 on Sunday. And by the time Sunday night came around, I had no voice.
Oh, yeah, but you remember. You remember your lines.
I had to do it in a very kind of, I had to do it in a kind of loud whisper.
Wow.
As I recall, and it was a very good performance because I had to concentrate so hard on just being heard, to be or not to be. That is the question. It was amazing. It was like very kind of.
And what's great is that the audience doesn't know. The audience has no idea. They said, look at it.
They never have any idea. Right. They never have. Oh, speaking of audiences not having an idea, Frank, I don't know. I didn't talk to you last time probably about when I was doing Frankie and Johnny in New York with Kathy Bates.
Mm-hmm. No, you didn't tell me.
Just this 2-character play, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're on stage all night together. And one night Kathy said to me, she said, Kenny, I've got the flu, I think, something. And I said, she said, well, if anything happens, don't be surprised. So I said, I'm fine, So there's a certain point in the first act when I go over to her and I give her a hug and I tell her I love her and I want to make love with her again. And she said to me, Johnny, excuse me. She walked out the bathroom, the door to the bathroom on the set,
mm-hmm.
went clanking down the steps of the West Side Arts Theater in New York because the washroom was downstairs. And I was left alone on stage for like 5 minutes while she, went down and had to do her business down there.
That's an eternity.
And of course, as you say, man, the audience has no idea what's going on.
Nope.
I get up, I start looking in the fridge, I'm walking around her apartment, checking this, checking that, lying back on the bed, turning on the TV.
And you're unaware how long it's going to, you don't even know how long it's going to take either, so you got to play that.
No idea. Man. No idea. But the audience is out there very quiet. They're thinking, uh-oh, this guy's crazy. He's going to murder her when she comes back. And she came back like nothing happened. Oh, Johnny, sorry, where were we? Oh, darling, we just carried on with the play. So you never know. Always what was so exciting about working on the stage, because anything can happen,
But remembering, did you ever blank out in terms of?
Of course.
Okay, well, tell me
about the worst.
Yes, tell
Listen,
me. Yeah.
Again, what? Talking about Hamlet. One night, after I'd been playing it for about 6 months, I went out there and I suddenly couldn't remember anything.
Uh-oh, that's the one.
It's like every line was like fresh to me. It was like I was making it up.
Whoa.
And it was probably the best performance I gave of it.
What was
happening was my mind was saying to me, oh, you think you know this part? Oh. Well, you're just doing it by rote now. You've been doing it so long, it's kind of like, habitual to you. And now I'm going to test you on it. So every line I had to think of.
Wow.
And I got off stage at the end of the show and I thought, oh my God, I just better forget about that because it's not going to happen again. But it was just brilliant,
Did you make up lines?
Crazy.
Did you make up lines or was it?
No!
No!
It all came out perfectly.
Oh, that's weird.
I mean, there were nights, especially if you're doing Shakespeare and you forget a line, it's pretty hard to make that shit up, but you do anyway.
Yeah.
You kind of stumble your way through it. You go, oh my Lord, this thing was, whatever. Actors, I remember, like, they were doing the Taming of the Shrew, I guess, out of the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. And Len Carreyrou was playing Petruchio. Mm-hmm. And Len was, like, off. He missed an entrance. What was he doing? I don't know. But all the actors on stage just kind of sat around for a second, and one of them got up and said, "Well, let's all scurry about." That's what they did. They scurried about until finally he came on stage. You know.
It's a weird thing. I mean, yes. Well, they have to make it.
Okay, here's another one.
Go.
Oh, Frank, now you got me going.
Good. I love these. We love
these. No. I was playing this, doing this play, called Social Security by Andy Bergman on Broadway with the late Ron Silver and with Joanna Gleason and, Marlo Thomas. Mm-hmm. And, I'm set to come on at the beginning of the second act with Joanna, you know, or this couple from Long Island. And, brother-in-law, sister of the couple. And what happened was, I happened to be watching the Mets game in the World Series of 1986 when they were, you know, on their way to winning mm-hmm. the World Series. So I'm in my dressing room, and I fail to hear, Ken, Mr. Welsh, you're on. Didn't hear it. Ooh. I'm sitting there watching the Mets game.
Oh.
Then somebody finally comes to my dressing room, and they say, Ken, get on stage now! So I come running behind the curtain, and what happens is Joanna's gone ahead of me, and she comes on. I can hear her behind the curtain saying, oh my God, parking in the Upper East Side is so difficult. Martin's outside, up there, he's trying to park the car, he's parking on 92nd Street, I don't know where. And so I come running in finally. And Ron takes his pause, he looks at me, and he just goes, parking, Martin, eh? Parking? You know, man.
That's crazy. I love that. I don't want it to happen to me.
I was off so many times, I don't know, just by talking backstage and doing this and that. You know, sometimes you lose your way, you know.
Well, there's the audience again. I mean, that's the difference between, I don't know who I was talking to, was saying that they couldn't adapt. They did stage so much that it was so difficult to adapt doing film. We have to do, you know, 2-3 takes, side wind, front, master shots. And they.
Yeah.
I don't know who was that? I don't know. I've talked to him. What about the transfer from film to stage?
Stage to film?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Stage to film.
Yeah, I guess stage to film.
In my case, anyway, for some actors doing the other way around, it mm-hmm. happens too. Movie stars are suddenly decide they're going to do a play. But for me, it was a lifetime of working on the stage. Well, lifetime. I'd been doing it like 20 years because, you know, when I started up here, there wasn't that much film work in the 60s, 70s. You know, it didn't really break for me until the 80s. But, I remember I was fortunate enough to have, I was doing a kind of docudrama, and there was this director who kept saying to me, Ken, just take it down a few notches, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
See, when you make that gesture with your hand, don't do that.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Just maybe move a little fingers. I was lucky enough to have a director who could kind of give me a little, you know, instruction on that, because you just come in front of a camera, you think it's the same thing, when of course it isn't.
Right, the nuance is so, you know? Yeah, it's so different.
Oh, my God, yeah. And then, of course, there was always, you know, the changing of the lens, you're doing the wide shot, the close-up.
Oh, I know.
And at first I used to do it, like, differently for the close-up and the wide. Now I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I do it exactly the same way, because that's the way they're going to have to edit it, right?
Yes, and it's
tedious. If they cut from a wide shot to a close-up to a medium, it's got to be the same performance exactly. Or not exactly the same, but, mm-hmm. you know, roughly in the same area. So I just finished, I don't know if I was telling you last time, because I don't think I started it yet.
Well, you had started
something.
You were
a really interesting, a series called Lodge 49.
Sure, that's why, remember I was trying to get in touch with you, and you said, no, I'm doing Lodge that number.
Lodge 49. Yeah.
That's done. Is it?
So, yeah, I went down to Long Beach to finish it off, you know, doing the exterior shots this last month. And, you know, it was, that was a great experience. I really had a good time with that one.
What is that going to be? So a series? Is it a cable series or something? What is it?
Well, it's going to be on AMC, I guess. That's cable, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. Well, I guess so. Yeah, everybody's cable now, anyway.
Sometime in June.
And it's a series.
Yeah. I mean, they shot like 10 episodes, and I did this character who was in 6 of them. And then they killed me off.
Oh, I think something just killed
me. What I liked about it is that the... What's going on, Frank?
Well, I just lost you for a second. I said, after you said killed me off, I lost you. I went, hey, okay.
Well, he died.
Hey, I didn't kill you off. I just...
No.
Go ahead.
No, the best thing that was said to me was when one of the writer, producer, came up to me and said, Ken, I'm really sorry we killed you off. So, you know, that's always good to hear.
I'm going to bring you back.
He'd written me out. I was gone. But, you know, I guess they liked what I did so much that
maybe I could come back as a
ghost or something.
Or come back as a hologram. Just make sure you get paid.
Go! Exactly, yes.
They'll say, look, we got you. You don't have to come back. You don't have to be on set, okay? We're going to do it with this. And Kenneth Welsh is with us here on Cotolo Chronicles. And we're talking with him, a lifetime of acting. And just, you know, I always admired guys like you more than stars. I mean, people who just, you know, sit in a trailer and got extra perks and everything like that. Because that's, you know, anything I had done has always been in that vein. And you know, you guys are you're not heralded as much as you should be, you guys and gals. And, you know, supporting really makes the star. And you're able to really pick up, I mean, as hard as it might be, unless you got a good agent, but you're able to pick up a lot more diverse, pieces of work than a star actually. Cause once a star gets a brand, it's him. How many people do we know that, and you look at them and go, well, that's that. You know, and they keep trying. There's Harrison Ford. He's being Harrison Ford. You know?
You know? No, like when I went to New York, it took me, you know, a while. I didn't go right when I was really young. I was like 34 or something by the time I got there. Mm-hmm. And I basically made my living a lot of the time, like playing different kinds of Englishmen. So, because I guess American actors couldn't do it as well as some of us Canadians can do it. And so that's what I found myself doing, all these character parts, and all the accents were always different, like in The Real Thing, in another play, what was it called? I forget, Treats by Christopher Hampton. Mm. You know, and so I was always like bringing, you know, different color to a character that wasn't me really at all. So I always enjoyed that part of it.
When you have to, or how much do you audition as opposed to somebody saying, you know, just agent going, hey, you know, they were doing this thing, and I said, how about Kevin Welsh? And they went, oh yeah. So you just get it, or let some people know how that works, that they're listening.
Well, it depends. Now I don't audition so much, you know, and if I really like something will I audition for it, because you know, I don't care to do something that I don't really want to do. So I'll get a call, you know, from my agent, and they'll say, well, like when I did for this series, you know, Lodge 49, she said, can you put yourself on tape? And so what we do nowadays is, you know, my friend Andy, who lives down the road, he's one of the best Foley artists in the world, as it happens. Andy gets his iPhone out and reads the other part for me, and we just put it on the iPhone and send it off. And this one worked best for me because, not only was my audition good, but, so I remember the producer said to me, you know, Ken, your audition was good, but you know what sold it to us? Your fly was open.
That they noticed.
Because the character was kind of a crazy character. So they thought, this guy's, you know,
he nailed this one.
But no, generally speaking, That's what I do. If I do anything, I'll put myself on the iPhone.
Because the
or sometimes I'll just get offered it. You know, not so much.
That's
anymore.
What I mean.
It's,
yeah.
You know, it doesn't think there's not that many roles out there for an old guy like me. Man. And when they come up, I'm very happy.
Because
no.
People don't understand, people you just talk to who aren't in, or haven't been any, haven't really had a lot of exposure to show business or play or anything. There are some famous stories like, I mean, Hitler talked about Marlon Brando auditioning for The Godfather. I mean, like, what? What?
That's right.
Right? It's like, what? You tell people that and they go, get out of here. You know, it's like, come on. You know, these things happen because actors always they go in and out of style. They go in and out of this. Rumors can hurt someone, or someone doesn't want to work with someone else. This palace intrigue takes place in all of this, right? You know.
No, I think so, and it doesn't matter. You're right. It doesn't matter what you know at what
right.
you know level you're at as an actor that you're still required to audition, compete with someone else, and. And so my teacher always said, you know, you have to have two things as an actor. You have to have humility, which comes to play when you have to go, you know, on audition all the time and, you know, accept that you don't get a part most of the time. And the other thing is arrogance. And that's kind of telling yourself, all right, I'm good enough for this part. If I don't get it, I'll get another one. Mm-hmm. So when you combine, you know, these two things, it, you know, kind of puts you on a level space when it comes to auditioning or even playing a role, you know. So,
and then there are people.
Let me tell you
what. Go ahead. Tell me more. Tell me more.
How I actually got interested in this whole thing of being an actor.
Oh, I thought it was Gary Cooper, but if you got more to it, go.
No. I was in high school. I was like in grade 11 or something, and I had like an ex girlfriend, Carol, who said to me, "You want a really snap course? Take the drama course. I'll even sell you my textbook at half price," she said.
Oh, what a doll.
So I thought, well, that sounds like it'd be fun. So that's how I got into it.
Wow.
She said, it's a snap course, and I'll sell you my book for half price, the textbook. And once I got in there, well, you know, once I got into the course, I was sold like that. Done. So I have her to thank for it.
Yeah, I know that feeling because there's so many things I've gone into. Primarily, just, you know, like jumping into a pool because a woman was there.
Yeah, okay, there you go.
Yeah,
but also,
I
when it came time to choose what my course would be at the university, I thought I would be going into engineering. But then something came along called calculus. It was always about, ones and twos zeros. And that's, of course, became computer math. And at the time, I thought, oh, fuck, I can't go there.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided instead, I'll take the drama course. It's probably easier, you know, like it was in high school. So that was I kind of backed into it in a strange kind of way, even though, I kind of fell in love with it a lot. But
before
I think it was this.
Yeah, go ahead.
What were you going to say?
I want, don't want to get one or two things in here before the next 6 minutes pass, because I know you got to go.
I wanted to say something about,
go ahead.
You know, you're really good at what you do. You're a good interviewer. And I'm sure you remember Studs Terkel.
Yes, I do. I do remember Studs.
You remember Studs? I did a play, at the Goodman Theater in Chicago many years ago in the 70s, and it was called Arturo Uy by Bertolt Brecht. And Studs was so crazy about this show and about this performance, I guess, that how I played this character was kind of loosely, very much based on Adolf Hitler. And he had me on his show, you know, a couple of times, you know, and I still remember him being the great interviewer he was. And you are too. I get that sense that you really do this all the time. You do it so well.
It's the first time anyone ever said, compared me. I don't know if that was a comparison, but.
It was.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, man.
I'm going to tell everybody out there to go look it up because some young people, I'm always going to remember.
No, they wouldn't remember Studs at all, you know. I mean, an old guy like me, I'll say things they won't get at all. So, but, yeah, I do remember Studs very well. He was a very sweet guy.
If you had your druthers.
So,
and if you had your, I always look for a place to use the word druthers. This isn't If you had your druthers, give me one part that you've thought about or, you know, said, well, hey, if you had all the money, you'd produce it yourself or you'd do something to play that one part. Or have you played it already or what have you? Is there something you haven't done that you would go, oh, boy, that's I'd love to do that before. There's no more of me.
Well, I guess there is one left.
What?
That would be King Lear, which I've never played.
I think you did mention that last time. You mentioned something about King Lear. Someone mentioned it when we were on with the...
Possibly. Because I'm about the right age now. Not that anybody will offer it to me, because I don't know what's going on down there, but up here there's like three productions of Lear this year.
Really?
And they're all being played by women.
So King Lear is being played
which is fine. I'm feeling left out now, you know.
I was thinking maybe they were doing it because, you know, the daughter, the daughters play such a strong part in it that was the woman thing might have been the reason. But getting King Lear, they're not calling it Queen Lear. They're playing King. She's
I don't think so.
She's the king.
I don't know what they're doing.
Oh, you don't know.
I'm going to go see one of them. Maybe if I wait long enough, like another 4 years, it'll come back and maybe I'll get my chance.
I could play the fool. That's about the only Shakespeare I could play the fool, you know? As flies, two wanton boys are we to the gods. They kill us for this.
They kill us for their sport. Nicely done, man.
Thank you very much.
That's
Lear's
line. Very good.
Is it? Yeah. Wait, what? Did Lear say that? Yeah, he said it.
Yes, that's one of Lear's lines, yeah. So it's in his so-called mad scene, you know, where he says that.
Yeah. Well, I could still
play. Yeah, that's one I'd like to play.
Oh, that's a... Go.
Did I tell you invented a show called Stand Up Shakespeare?
No. Tell us if you have time.
Well, this was back... I was doing the real thing on Broadway. And Glenn Close invited me to this New Year's party at Bobby Duvall's house. I thought, oh, come on. I'm not going there. She said, Kenny, come on. Bring your flute, bring your trumpet, and play.
Of course, you're on Bobby.
It'll be fun. A fun evening.
Right.
And so I did. And as it happened, I was playing my flute, and I happened to be playing with Pat Metheny, but that's another story.
Okay.
But I met this guy called Ray Leslie, who was playing these tunes from Shakespeare at some time, you know, during the course of the night. And a few months later, I got this idea that I wanted to do Shakespeare as a stand-up comedian. And there was this place called the West Bank Cafe in New York, you know, on 42nd and 9th. And... the guy who was the in-house comedian downstairs there was Lewis Black.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and at that time, Lewis said, Ken, come on down here, do something, you know. You do a lot of Shakespeare stuff, come bring it down here, you know. So I did, and I did this kind of stand-up Shakespeare routine. And, you know, I eventually brought in singers, and I made the whole thing into a little play about how this old guy falls in love with this young woman, and she rejects him, much like happens in Shakespeare a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And this became quite popular enough that eventually Mike Nichols saw, you know, I was, because Mike was, you know, he directed the real thing, and he wanted to put this as an off-Broadway production. So it just, like, the way this happened, you know. That's probably the thing I enjoyed doing most, really, was creating that play and doing it down to the West Bank, you know, the odd time, or, you know, for like a couple of years. And that really gave me a lot of satisfaction knowing that I'd created this thing and that I actually was able, because I had this like monologue that I made out of sewing together different lines from different plays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could do it for you some other night, but... and because I just wanted to know what it was like to get up there in front of people and do like a stand-up routine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I found that very satisfying.
Yeah, I'd like to.
It satisfied a different part of me as an actor that I wouldn't otherwise have been able to explore, you know? So, I don't know. I just thought I'd tell you that little story.
Well, I like that, and we'll have to hear the whole story next time you're on.
Some other time, yeah.
I
still do it now and then. I'll go in front of an audience with a big sheet of paper with like 30 characters on it, and invite them to pick one, and I'll do it.
Wow, that's good. Maybe we can do that next time. I'll pick a couple of characters.
Yeah, I could throw a couple at me.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, and we'll do that. Since you have to go, do you have to go now?
Right. He won't. My friend hasn't arrived yet.
Okay, so let's say he comes.
She gets it.
Sure, sure. Let's wait.
Yeah. So she, once she comes through the door, you know.
She'll say hi, and we'll go, thank you for being. Thank you for being here. Thank you for taking Kate away from us here for that. But what do you mean we're in the same time? Where are you now? You're in Alberta?
No, man.
No.
I grew up there.
Yeah,
I grew
exactly.
up there.
So.
I am living where I live. I'm just like, northeast of Toronto, in this little village called Sanford.
Okay, so that's...
Which, oddly enough, is called the Hamlet of Sanford.
Oh, yeah, not a village or a hamlet.
A hamlet is like
sure.
a small town.
Sure.
So whenever I come home, I drive along the road there, and I say, oh, the Hamlet of Sanford, that's me. I'm up here. It's about, I don't know, I guess
is that
an
where
hour
you,
north.
Is that where you did going shortly to go? Is that where you did that?
No, we shot that actually in the Colin Fox's house.
Okay.
The other actor who was in it with me.
When
and he lives in a place called Elora, which is like east of, or rather west of Toronto. A very beautiful place. But no, I'm up here. I've been living in this old schoolhouse, an old schoolhouse for like
really
29 years now.
Wow.
I raised my son here. Now, of course, he's on his own. And, so but, I'm here
yeah,
living,
no, no,
living,
you have
living
to,
alone.
You have to make that clear, though, these days. My son raised here, and of course he's on his own, because these days, you know, they could be 34 and still in the...
That's right. No, he went to McGill University in Montreal. Mm-hmm. He lives there. He's a singer. He writes his own stuff. He's had a couple albums out.
Mm-hmm.
And,
that's why we're in the same time zone. I got confused from that.
There you go, man. But no, I'm right here.
You know, but that's a good place to be up there. But
I
liked Alberta. I was there for a while. I was there at the speaking of Olympics, which we didn't. Well, you weren't here. I was there for the Olympics at Calgary.
Oh, Calgary. Yeah.
Yeah, I was.
That was the Winter Olympics some time ago. I forget when that was. 80s, wasn't it?
Yeah,
right?
82 or was it 4? 84, 82?
I think so, man. What were you doing out there?
I was at the Olympics.
I went out.
I had a marvelous trip because it started. I was living in L.A. at the time, and it was L.A. to Sacramento, and then Sacramento to Vancouver. So I'm in Vancouver, and then took that. I don't know if they have it anymore. That the train, the Canadian Rail, that went across to from Vancouver to Calgary.
Oh yeah.
No, I don't think they have that.
Oh no, that was a great route.
I wanted to go by train because I loved train. And,
I traveled by train very often when I was young because I had relatives out on the island. My father and mother would go out there every summer, and my dad worked for the Canadian National Railway,
mm-hmm.
and we traveled for nothing on the train. Good. So that beautiful trip through the Rocky Mountains, I remember very well.
It's great. It is a great trip.
Oh God, it's gorgeous! But now, of course, it's a luxury trip.
Is it?
You know, it's like thousands of dollars.
Whoa, really? Now. I had a place, you know, sleep and everything. I mean, you know, the whole
sure,
day. Yeah.
You had a birth.
Yeah. Had a birth, had a rebirth, and I went.
Well, I used to travel by train when I went to theater school in Montreal, and it would cost me like another $35 to have my own private compartment.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, this was the early 60s, you know, so.
Well, in the 80s, I think that train continued. I think it went from Vancouver to Montreal. I think it went cross country, but I stopped it. Well, obviously at Calgary.
Yeah, well.
And I spent some fun times in Edmonton.
Do you remember steam engines? You're too young for that.
Oh, I do. No, well, I remember it. I'm not that young. I do remember steam engines. we might be a generation, just a generation apart. That's right.
Yeah. The steam engine, you know, and you're traveling along the train. You could open the windows, you could go between cars, and stick your head out and see the smoke coming out of the chimney on the engine. What do you call that thing?
The locomotive.
The train, Frank.
The locomotive. Yeah.
The
locomotive.
Sorry, my memory. It's getting late at night.
Well, when I was, you know, I grew up in, I was unfortunate enough to grow up in Brooklyn, New York. So trains, were subways, you know, I mean, the trains were trains.
Yeah.
I was, you know, I got subway stories up the kazoo, and you
know, you know, someone's just come in.
Is she here?
Yes, she is. Yeah, yeah.
Let me just say hello. Let me just say hi.
All right. Hey, Barb. Here, say hi.
Frank Cotolo,
he's
on the phone.
Hi,
Frank, how are you?
Oh, hey.
Hi, Frank.
Hi, how are you?
Frank's gone. Frank.
I'm here. I'm
Frank,
here.
Where'd you go?
I'm here. Hello. Hello, I'm here. Hello. What? I'm here. Hello. I'm here. Do you hear me?
No. Okay.
Okay, well.
Oh, I've lost you, Frank.
Oh, geez. Well, look.
I don't know what to do now.
Well, we'll say goodbye. I don't know. That's all we could do right now. Say goodbye, and I wish I could write it, but I can't. Oh, there he goes, Kevin Welsh.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you perfectly. Can you hear me?
Okay, because suddenly I can't hear
you. Wow. No. All right. Well, okay.
Now I can hear you again.
Okay, good. Well, I just let me politely say goodbye. And good night.
Okay, Barb, say hi to Frank.
Hi, Frank.
Hi, Barb. How are you doing? How are you doing?
Yeah,
no. All right.
Hi, Frank.
Hi, how you doing? Good?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Great. You're in for a great evening. He's very talkative tonight.
Okay, good. All right. Thanks for winding him up.
No problem. That's what I do. I wind them up and let them go.
You're the man.
Yeah, Frank. You're doing very well.
Thank you, Kent. Please come back. We'll be in touch, okay?
Okay. It's always a pleasure talking with you.
Same here. It's my pleasure. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Okay, Frank.
Ciao.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Kevin Welsh and the problems of Skype and Lord knows what else that's going on. We have down here, we have to, turn off Skyping tonight. Oh, okay. That's another thing there. Let me tell Mr. Savino, I will go you. He'll be getting here in 20 minutes or so. So we'll take a short, Kevin Welsh. So you see, things happen and, we got him on. And that's good. And we will have him on again. What a wonderful stories. You know, a seasoned, as I like to say, seasoned performer. And it's to be compared to Studs Terkel. First time anyone. Why don't you go get your Cotolo Chronicles notebook and go look up Studs Terkel. You could find him and then and say, is that you? I don't know. No one's ever said Studs Terkel for me, but I'll tell you this much here, as we do have another 20 minutes, and we'll talk about some things before we get you over to Tom. In the meantime, in between time, I will do this and run off to dispose of some bodily waste, replenish my precious bodily fluids or what have you. Stay with us. This breaks a little late, but it's here. We shall be right back.
In a world where reading is dying out, a new champion emerges. Wacky Escapades. parallel universes.
Hello, everyone. This is me, Frank Cotolo.
There's never a dull moment as Frank weaves a tale of a writer making you laugh, chuckle, and learn a bit about life. Pick up License to Scale by Frank Cotolo, now on Amazon for your Kindle.
Hi, I'm Julian Lennon. Are you in the band? Join me and band together for Lupus to support the Lupus Foundation of America and its efforts to provide research, education and support for all people living with lupus. Visit lupus.org to learn more about this chronic disease affecting 1.5 million Americans and find out how to join the band today.
Hey guys, I'm Jess.
And I'm Lisa from the Variety Cares for Rad.
We see a lot of things at gigs, mostly people having a good time and having a few drinks. But what we'd hate to see is someone getting behind the wheel after they've been drinking. Being even a little bit over the limit makes it too easy to lose control and possibly lose your life or that of a friend. So if you plan to drink, plan ahead. Arrange a designated driver who won't drink or stay the night at a friend's place. Remember, music lives and you should too.
A public service message brought to you by Rad, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
I want to tell you to do one thing, though, and if you'll pay attention to me, it might save your life. I want you to buckle up and live. Seatbelts and shoulder harnesses can be your second chance. Now, if you never had an accident, you could be next, because you gamble every time you get in your car. Now, you cut down the odds against you getting killed, you understand, by buckling up your seatbelt or your harness. Use them as advised by your car's manufacturer, and have your passengers use them, too. Automobile accidents can be deadly. Be sure you get that second chance. Buckle up and live.
Everybody's voting for the friendly voice at radio, the people's choice. Music, weather, sports, and news, it's radio. The people choose. Everybody's swinging to the swinging voice at radio, the people's choice. Big fry, small fry.
Radio that makes
us.
Yeah.
There. You know what I mean?
I know, yes. Thank you very much for telling me that. It's like a hologram. I should have a hologram of Wolfman on the side. That would be weird. So I'm looking at, I'm thanking again Ms. Welsh for that wonderful discussion. While I was looking for, you know, various things like, you know, when I was having problems getting him, I found here in my Yahoo, I had to open up my Yahoo Mail. Well, here's my Yahoo Mail. I'm still trying to do about 100 things here at the same time. Okay, here's my Yahoo Mail. And while I was here, I said, you know what? I have a perfect time to make amends to Marla for being so horrible about her name. Studs Terkel wouldn't have done that. Just, Marla Martinson, that son, Martinson. I don't know why, Martin-dun, because that's dun-dun-dun. Those three syllables, dun-dun-dun, Stevenson, Martinson. I didn't realize it was a son or I would have caught it, you know. Marble cake, mention me, you know, things like, oh, there's a, that's the, hi, Tom. Mr. Savino will be here for those of you listening live or listening on a radio station that is playing Savino Veritas afterwards. Marla Martinson is a professional matchmaker. This is why I'm telling you this is going to be fun. Because, boy, over the years, of all the subjects that we have talked about relating to the interweb, And the dating scene, of course, is one, and the artist D and I have talked about it countless times. I don't know if it's countless, but sure was it's a lot. And that, so this should be fascinating. To be a professional matchmaker, certainly before, I don't know, we'll find out. Because there were there were matchmakers who were professionals. The profession goes way back. Not as far back as the oldest profession, but it does go back. Marla Martinson. Wow. What is that? Just heard, did you hear that? The truck pulling up here? Marla Martinson, let me just read you a bio here. So this is a little, we'll be talking. This is why you're going to know, if you know me or of me or what have you, this is going to be fascinating. Marla Martinson is a professional matchmaker and the author of the spiritual memoir, The Buddha Made Me Do It, a field guide to enlightenment. That's L-I-T-E. Enlightenment. W-N-B-C. Don't go there. Marla is also a Reiki crystal healer. I know, Tom, if you're listening and getting ready to go on, you know that Reiki crystal stuff. And Tom knows, wow, geez, you can have her on your show too, Tom, because I'm sure you have a lot more in common with her, with that stuff. But you, so I'll learn more about it and probably too much. And I hope I don't even inadvertently sound like I'm having a problem with what she believes and does. As some people have come on, but Marla Martinson seems like she's freer than that. And I'm referring to something I haven't talked about in a while anyway. So let's just look at this. So she has a show on YouTube called Cosmic Conversations. Cosmic Conversations. And Cosmic Conversations from YouTube. So if you want to go see Marla Martinson, and check that out. Marla has appeared on countless radio and TV shows. Countless is in your resumes. You use that. I've used it before. Why, there were just an infinite number. What is an infinite number? You can't, infinity doesn't have an end. So it's like an infinite number. It's probably the same calculation is the skier who wins by 1/10 of 1/1,000,000th of a second of a millisecond, the Olympics. She's also been, and here, this is my next, she's been somewhere, she's been on Coast to Coast with George Norrie. Now you know how much, you know how I've dealt with, do you remember? Okay, doesn't matter. I'm not taking any of this into any consideration. She came to me through Jiggy Jaguar, and not many people who come to me through Jiggy Jaguar get on this show because I don't do a lot of this, you know, show promotional stuff, which is why people come on to shows, sell things or what have you. A friend of mine has an album coming out. She's like, can I be on the show? It's like, well, you're going to have to travel here and do it, or you want, you know, whatever. I don't know. I don't even know what my audience cares. My audience don't care for clothes. My audience just cares for me. Marla has appeared in countless radio TV, including the Today Show, WGN Chicago Morning News, and Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. George Norrie, must not, okay. She lives in Los Angeles with her husband, composer Adolfo John Alexei. Well, if you're going to be a composer or a dancer, he could have been a dancer with Adolfo John Alexei. So she's really, so here, maybe that's why I'm having a trouble with the last name. She's Marla Martinson. She married, Alexei. So she's, I don't know if John Alexei doesn't have a hyphen. So his last name is probably Alexei. So she's really Marla Alexei. See how I can get myself into trouble? You do see it and you hear it. Marla has a website, Marla Martinson, that's MARTENSON.com. So if you want to go ahead there and look at stuff and maybe buy the book, she should have sent me a book. The Buddha Made Me Do It. You hear that, Tom? The Buddha Made Me Do It is the name of the book. Maybe you should check her out too, Tom. MarlaMartinson.com. She'll be on the show. I promised you Kenneth Welsh and I delivered, didn't I, after all this time? Got to get more guests. And then wait, when we don't have more guests, what else are we going to do? I'm telling you right now with the few minutes that we have left. As I told you, we're going to do, I want you to get over to read Rocket Science. My new Rocket Science is out of fourculture.com. How do you keep track of all this stuff, Frank? Are you going to go back to the Montreal Jewish News? You were off Four Culture and you come back to Four Culture with Rocket Science and you're on 148.ca and then you tell us about all these books. What do you think? What do you think? It's Output Extraordinaire from Mr. Stupid. Oh, this stuff's falling down here. And more of what I, but what's wrong with me? More of my particular, this is a new style too, because I'm so involved in doing something else, which I'm going to be doing right after this show. I'll catch Tom on the rebound because I have to turn over the broadcasting apparatus. Is it apparatus or apparatus? The apparatus to Mr. Tom Savino. T-H-O-M. You know, it was Tom Savino until I said, wait a second, you gotta be Tom, T-H-O-M. Did you know that? Did you know I did that? No, how would you? Unless I told you. So we're all on a minute late, because of some other various stuff, but this is where we're at. And you can listen to this show again or download it. Talk about Mr. Welsh. Kenneth Welsh. JuicedTalk.com. It'll be coming up. And on your Twitter account, you will see when Juiced Talk promotes it. You will see that. Introduce them, Mr. Kenneth Welsh. And there's other shows there too. And of course, the shows to come that won't have guests, that will include some, past shows, bits. Should I call them bits? No, let's call them portions. I don't know what to call them, really, because I don't know what the hell I do here. Sections, portions of today's program are brought to you. Portions of shows where topics were so good, people liked them, and I cannot recreate them because they weren't written, and I don't write them. So that's that. And I'm a writer, so go figure that one out. That's the name of the game. And, of course, the other places where you could go and get the... You know, self-promotion is very important. When the internet, I was criticized today for self-promoting on that Twitter stuff, on that Twitter, you know? And I said, well, look, you got to understand, and you have to understand, and you have to believe in and be able to do self-promotion. I do everything. You got to be a cottage industry when you're dealing with the interweb. People can't tweet for you. You've got to tweet. So you got to have the time to tweet. And you have to have the time to promote whatever it is you do. Whether it's just talk on a radio like Studs Terkel. How do I remind him of Studs Terkel? All right, you go figure it out. I'm going to figure it out too later on. And so that's why I say I told you the three places to go to get the books. Get the books. You got to buy them. Sorry, they're not free like everything else here has been over the last 20 years. My name is Frank Atolo, the man whose name adorns the title of the show. And I am going to, I'll tell you all the stuff that's happening as it, each week as we get into it, including what? Including, what I told you, Montreal Jewish News. And I'll tell you when I'm going to be on the Howard show. Howard Zibinger. And, up there in Montreal where I do pulp, political pulp for the Montreal Jewish News. Whenever it comes back. Because it's being attacked, as I said, it's as volatile as Israel itself. But I love the Jewish community in Montreal. Apparently they love me. And every time I'm up there and do that, they buy my books and they read me. I get a whole bunch. And that, of course, is where True Talk Radio is located. And True Talk Radio runs this show twice a day on weekdays. So you can hear it on the show. You can hear me, on an internet radio. You can hear it separately. You can hear it live. any number of things, actually an actual number. And that number is 1/10 of 1/1,000,000th of a second of whatever that might be. The point is, we're ready to move along. All right?
That's control over there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. You should speak into the mic. You should know that by now, how to do that. So what we'll do, we'll be handing it over to you-know-who very shortly here as we move on. Get out of here. Why is that guy, not this guy calling me yet? You're not going on no radio show. If he calls again, we'll hang up on him again. My name is Frank Atolo. The man whose name adjoins the title of the show. Listen to me. Coming up, you know who, and unless it's another station or what have you. Thank you, Kenneth Welsh, for being here. He'll be back, and so will others. In the meantime, in between time, good night, Mrs. Ernstwhile, wherever you may be located. I'm Frank Cotolo, the man whose name adjoins the title of the show, Cotolo. Well, that's all. I guess that's it. Now go into another realm, another dimension, some wonderful content with Sabina Veritas. I guess that's it. I'll leave you because I have nothing more to say.